the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Well, if any of you know me, you know the devil never made me think twice. I just did what I wanted to do, and that's why I'm where I am and why these two are where they are. They made poor choices as well. Shout out to Chris Stapleton. Jay, I saw you celebrating as soon as you heard it. Have you listened to the new album yet, like I told you to?
Yep. When I listen to something, I go from front to back, man. Stapleton encourages me to get a glass of whiskey, and it just takes the bite off of it for me. Like, Stapleton changes your drink. He's that good.
Yeah. I told you, man, it'll be a great album to play while we're on the golf course next year. Especially since next year we're going to get Russ on the golf course. It's going to happen, whether he wants it or not. Yeah, I see the hands up. That was Sergeant Salty. Statman Russ Ivanek. We're going to put him to work today. There is a lot to talk about. Obviously, we teased an NBA show last week. Weren't able to do that. Technical difficulties on my part. Tried to get everything out to you we could, but not only now do we have to cover NBA free agency and the draft and the Pistons. Oh, by the way, guys, we have to cover a head coaching change here in Detroit. Guys, we've made it longer than Matt Patricia did in Detroit. That's how good we are at what we do. Yeah, exactly. Applause for everyone there. I'm happy for you both. Matt Patricia, Bob Quinn fired after Patricia didn't even get through 3 years. Quinn, obviously, extra year there. I'm going to lead this off in the most simple, clear-cut, easy way I can, Jay. Jim Caldwell had the records of 11-5, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7 for 36-28. Matt Patricia, 6-10, 3-12, 4-7 this year. Let's just assume it would have ended with 4-6 or 4-12. It would have been bad for 13-29. Did Bob Quinn set a team trending upwards back multiple years by firing Caldwell and hiring Patricia?
I think it's that and it's his draft selections. I think they built a team that was destined to fail. And it's easy to say that on being on this end of the story now, but they built a bad team. They built a bad culture. You see these players coming out of the woodworks, taking their little pity shots on Twitter. Like, they built the opposite of what you want in a team, and it stems from the top down, man. It really does.
By the way, Jay said story, but when he said story, I heard sorry. Like, just the most Canadian sorry ever. That's just my impression of Jay, that he's secretly Canadian. No, I agree. I will argue with you on that a little bit. I mean, we'd have to go through this with a fine-tooth comb, and we kind of did that a couple weeks ago. I'm not as upset with their draft selections, at least the higher up ones. I mean, anything from fourth or fifth round down, you're really just kind of taking what you think is the best available and understanding it likely isn't going to stick. But go top three rounds, I'm not too upset with it. There were those pieces that worked. There were those pieces that didn't work. Obviously this year's draft class, we have to kind of put a big question mark on. You don't know what Okuda, we see flashes for Okuda, flashes for Swift. Last year and the year prior, Kerryon is still, like, we don't know what they want to do with Kerryon. I don't think they really know what they want to do with Kerryon. Hockenson appears to be a pretty steady target. I mean, he's not Travis Kelce, he's not Zach Ertz yet, but he appears to be a steady target who's trending upwards, in my opinion. So I think, listen, he wasn't Matt Millen. Let's put it that way. He at least managed to get guys that were going to stay. I mean, we can argue Kenny Golladay in the third round is an absolute steal of a pick. I think if people know what they know, Kenny Golladay is a first round draft choice right now.
Yep. That's his, like, Henrik Zetterberg that saved him, which saved Holland. Like, that's the comparable there.
Look, I'm not like trying to like tout him as like the guy that really just wasn't given a chance, because Russ, I put it this way. other than that 7-9, that's a solid record for Caldwell. And even 7-9 just says, hey, we had an off year. 11-5, 9-7, 9-7, playoffs 2 out of 4 years, trending. Oh yeah, she's a cutie. I like her. Trending upwards. But to me, the hiring of Patricia was the, I want my own guy. Well, your own guy just set us back multiple years and could cost us in the end a lot of chances at winning.
Yeah. And I think it can't be understated how pivotal it was to get it right that time, because that was Stafford's peak of his prime. And it's gone. It's father time, don't go backwards. He doesn't backpedal like some of our, well, I guess he does backpedal like some of our DBs, because they also aren't very good. but I don't think Quinn cost the team years of winning by firing Caldwell. I think he did it by hiring Patricia, obviously. I think there was a correct coach that could have been out there at the time that would have taken this team to the next step. Obviously, it wasn't Patricia. We've got some lessons learned on what to avoid the next time now, that we really should have seen these red flags coming. And I assume as we get into it, we can talk about those. But it's looking back, man, this should have been obvious, huh?
Yeah. I have a quick yes or no for both of you, because I'm going to jump around my card now, because Russ kind of led me into another question I had for later. But quick yes or no, and then we'll move on to the next one. Russ, if Caldwell, if they don't do that 3 years ago, are Bob mm-hmm. Quinn and Jim Caldwell both still here right now?
Oof. No.
No?
No. I think Jim Caldwell's still gone. I mean, he's a better coach than Patricia, but I still don't think he was taken to the mountaintop.
Okay. Jay?
I think I agree with Russ that they'd be gone, but we'd be leaning in the right direction opposed to this direction. I think the next coach, even if Caldwell was to stay, that coach would be gone, because they're like the placeholder. They're the person that's trying to get the room in a different direction for the one that's going to take us, hopefully, to like a Super Bowl or a playoff game. That'd be nice.
Well, see, I agree that they would be gone, but I think we would have had what we had 3 years ago, like this year or next year, where it would have been consecutive 10, 9, 10, 11 win seasons, but it would have been first round knockouts, maybe a playoff win, yes. But what I see it as is, instead of going back to square one, Jay, you won't get this because you just figured out what basketball was like 2 years ago. Rush, you'll get this. This, to me, it could have potentially been like when they fired Rick Carlisle and hired Larry Brown, and they won the title the very first year with Larry Brown.
Yeah.
That team was already built. It was just they needed the right guy to put the pieces in the right place. That's what we could have had.
Oh, it could have been John Gruden going to the Buccaneers.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, Tony Dungy built
Dungy
that team.
Dungy leaves.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's go ahead, Jay.
So one question then, while we're doing this whole like what if scenario,
yeah.
What if they actually didn't go down the Patricia road and they got Vrabel after we see what he's doing with Tennessee, because he was the other guy that was being considered for us? Like, that would have been different,
see,
totally different.
I think no matter what, and I'm going to say this with all kindness in the world, a defensive minded coach was not the right idea at that time. This defense was going to be bad, so bringing in a guy that was known for his defense was going to fail no matter what, because that defense was not going to turn around in 2 years. It just wasn't going to happen. You could have literally put Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, all these guys on there, and we still would have had a hard time stopping people. We still would have, because we had too many holes to fill. I see Russ. I see
that's
Russ
like 30% of your defense then. I mean, if you put all pros as 30% of your defense, the rest has to be like us. For you to still be awful.
Doesn't matter. You notice I didn't mention a corner in there anywhere, and Big Play Slay wasn't going to get it done. I'm just saying, Vrabel might still be here. The product probably looks a little different, but at the same time, the Lions needed to get one side of the ball figured out first, and unfortunately, instead of trying to finish that offense, they kind of plugged a couple spots and then said, all right, now let's figure out the defense. And it's like, no. Figure out the offense entirely, and then we could start working on the defense. Because as we know in the NFL, defense is great. It's the offense that's going to keep you in the games. It's the offense you're going to need when the defense is bad. They instead decided to kind of put a tarp over a three-quarter finished house and start building another one next door. And that's how I feel about it.
I love analogies.
Yeah, you're there.
I appreciate that.
Russ kind of pointed it out. So, Russ, I'll let you go first here. Again, I'm jumping around, but... does a new head coach or GM mean the end for Matt Stafford. You've got Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Kyle Trask, all projected to be first-round quarterbacks this year. Does assuming they all leave, which, as far as I know, Trevor Lawrence could stay. I don't know why he would stay. He's the number one pick in the draft if he goes. Zach Wilson is riding a hype train right now out of BYU. So does a head coach GM change spell the end for Stafford in Detroit?
No, I don't think it locks him into leaving. It opens the door, sure, if they're going to do the full teardown rebuild. If they hire some kind of completely inexperienced head coach that we don't think is ready to win now, sure. But it's not like Stafford's 36. He's still got some years left. He could still be a bridge. I expect in at least the first four rounds, a quarterback's going to get taken.
By the way, I want to give Russ this number because it's something he can play with.
Yeah.
If you were to get rid of Stafford right now, it would cost us $24,850,000 in the dead cap.
Exactly. And that's not worth it. That is two quality players you could go and get for paying Stafford to not be here. Yes. Even if you wanted to go the full tank route.
Yeah.
Spend those resources elsewhere to go find something else, right? And keep Stafford around because dude's not the problem. Dude's never been the problem. And you can lose with him. They've proved that if everything else is bad. I don't think it means he's gone. But it does open the door if they want to go full nuclear for the first time in his career.
Yeah, I have to agree a little bit with what Russ is saying. I think what it does is if you get a good head coach that's smart, this is his succession plan, where he doesn't have to do a lot of work. He can go draft a young quarterback, let Stafford handle that, and focus his attention on other things. As much as I know Stafford's not the quarterback that's going to win us a playoff game, like that's not happening because of the environment that he works in, we'll keep him for now to deal. If he had Tua right now, we'd probably still keep Stafford to help mend that, like the bridge, like Russ is referring to. So you hang on
every time.
That's one less thing. You
have. Yeah, there's your obligatory mention of Tua.
Yeah, well, just like you got paid for Ben Wallace.
Worst case, you're looking at an Alex Smith situation with Mahomes, where you draft your new guy, he proves he's ready, and then you send him out the next year.
And
worst case.
And I would like to say, I'm going to go on record to saying this right now. Obviously, we still have the rest of the season. We have the combine. We have individual workouts. I will say it right now. None of these guys are ready to start week one in the NFL. Trevor Lawrence, I make a prediction right now that I think Trevor Lawrence is going to fall prey to the Alabama effect. You have so many amazing people around you that when you actually have to be the talented one and you're on a team that doesn't have all that, you're going to start noticing, oh, wait, this guy's good. He's not that good. Because you see it. Name the last time an Alabama quarterback succeeded in the NFL. I can tell you his name is Joe Namath. So, it's just that, get me wrong, Trevor Lawrence is going to be good, but no matter what, he's going to a bad team. I just think you're going to realize Trevor Lawrence is not this superstar we thought he was. He was just a really good player on a really good team.
It doesn't hurt he's going to go to one of the worst teams ever.
God,
that does no favors.
Yeah.
And who knows, stunted development this year with COVID. Who knows what the next offseason is going to look like? Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm that we're going to see the fewest rookie starting quarterbacks we ever had.
All right, well, it's been long enough. I have to start pissing Justin off. So I'm going to give you a conspiracy theory that I have read multiple times on Twitter. Again, this is clickbait, but it's still something. Unfortunately, we hired Matt Mellon, so we have to at least talk about this through the Fords. Justin, rumor that former Lions linebacker Chris Spielman is a candidate for the GM job. Does this feel like a Michigan man kind of thing?
There's nothing more that annoys me in sports when there is a vacancy of a very prized job. And I got to look at, I saw a list that had, Kellen Moore?
Coach, yeah. We're going to come back to that one, buddy. I like that one. We're going to come back to that one.
I take that stuff and I pack it up tight and I chuck it out my window. I don't care for this nuanced stuff. I just want the right guy. I don't want the popular people's opinion. So when I hear stuff like Spielman, no. I want a guy who can cultivate a culture. I don't think Spielman could do that.
Rusty?
I think cultivating a culture is the only thing that Chris Spielman will be able to do. There are going to be a lot of scary, scary takes of, oh God, oh no, it's Matt Millen all over again.
Absolutely.
Being a successful player, goes to the booth, and then tries to be a GM. I don't want him there. I honestly want a GM you've never heard of. But, and I can't tell you the name, but that's the guy I want, right? Because he's being hired, or she's being hired, on their merit and not because of the name. Because, oh God, am I so sick of hiring based on the name. And that's what Chris Spielman would really be.
No, I agree. The only thing I'm going to say in his defense, because I think this whole hire the former players who have proven they can stay around in this league and other aspects, and clearly no. The only case I'm going to give you, and it's still very early on in this case, is Mike Mayock with the Raiders. That guy had no front office experience, nothing whatsoever, other than he was a scout. He was an NFL guy who did the commentary and scouting, played in the NFL, but it was a long time ago. As this Oakland Raiders, or this Las Vegas Raiders team, looking pretty darn good. Look, they still have to get past Kansas City no matter what, so likely not this year, probably not next year either. But they're at least trending upwards. Guys like Jacobs, guys like Waller, they've seemed to figure out how to get Derek Carr going again. So this is a pretty good team. Everybody thought, oh, Gruden and Mayock's first year, they traded away Khalil Mack. Okay, Khalil Mack's a great football player. He's on Chicago, so he's stuck in a terrible, terrible situation. But that Raiders team seems to have rebounded, turned it around. So I will say there are times where it works, and there are times where that risk pays out. But 9 times out of 10, that risk is going to end up coming back to bite you. So I like Spielman. Great guy. Had the chance to talk to him multiple times working on Lions broadcast. Stay in the booth, buddy. You're doing a good job there. There's no need to, you know, set yourself back by taking this job.
I mean, if he wants to come and work a front office job that's not the GM job, sure. You know, that could be a nice feel-good story. Be a football-facing side of the organization.
Well, you want to get your foot in the door, I'm okay with.
Exactly.
Train it. Kind of like when Stevie retired. They didn't just, like, they handed him a job in waiting if he hung around long enough, but he didn't. Luckily, he got another situation. But he worked his way up. It wasn't like, okay, I retired. Time for me to be GM. Let's go.
Yeah. Like,
he worked his way up to it. And that's what Spielman, get a front office job. Mm-hmm. Become a director of scouting or something like that. Build up to it. So maybe in 5-10 years, if we can hold on to a GM that long, you could work your way into the position. You're not ready for that position right now, is how I feel.
Agree.
Okay, so we are going to debate, or we're going to talk about which way we'd like them to go with the whole head coaching situation. But before I do that, I want to ask you both, because my answer is pretty close to this question of how I want them to go. But I want to know, Russ, what does it take over the next couple months for Daryl Bevel to get an interview after this season's done? Or is this a complete clean the house situation?
So I've actually been wrestling with this one for a while. Not to tip my hand, but I have a scenario where Daryl Bevel has some interesting connections to the would-be head coach. It would make sense for some continuity stuff. But to answer your question, I think market improvement. Stafford can't be averaging 7 yards per pass attempt, right? Stafford got shut out for the first time in his life against Carolina. Right, you go back, he didn't get shut out in college. He didn't get shut out in high school. I somehow had to find his high school game logs, by the way. That was a dig. But I got him, and he was never shut out. This is the first time. That's a terrible stink on Bevel's record. So he's got to do something. We got to be talking minimum 3 wins the rest of the way, right, out of the last, I think it's 5 games. And this offense has to look dramatically different. It has to be loose and explosive, and I don't care if Galladay's there or not. It has to be a strength of this team. And if it's not, it's going to be tough to be able to justify bringing him back when there's so much of a stink on what's there, and you want to start over.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fearful for the schedule. And we go Bears, Packs, Titans, Bucks, Vikings. That's 1-4. And if Bevel survives that and can stay as the offensive coordinator, I don't know if you go from interim back down to OC. I don't know how that looks. I don't know how many points they got to score and lose for him to keep his job. I can see him going. I can see them just having a head coach come in and be like, mm-mm, look at your tail. Look at, I mean, like, the quote that Bevel has that he's going to let his players play with, like, his hair's light on fire, that's, like, the most, like, football thing to say after you become an interim head coach. Like, fuck you. Like, I love, like, Bevel's been great. I've got no problem with that. But that's, like, the most, like, oh, we're going to open up the playbook. It's, you know, dude, you're going 1-4, and I don't see him playing any or working any position for the Lions next year.
Okay. So neither of you even remotely see a situation where he gets an interview?
I see it possible. I think it's possible. And I think ultimately they're going to talk to him because they know him. But for it to be a realistic shot, we got to see a lot of new stuff in the closing of this season.
Okay. Well, I'll lead this off because I can make it easy for you. Darrell Bevel stays. He gets the head coaching job for the reason of this year has been a cluster. Take COVID, take injuries, take everything, take the fact that I don't think anybody really wanted Matt Patricia here to start the year, let alone try to deal with him 10 weeks into the season now. So I think, personally, Bevel gets the job. You bring in a defensive coordinator who has no offensive jobs on this man's resume. It has to be defense across the board. I don't care if you came up, you know, safeties, coach of the safeties, defensive backs coach, assistant defensive line coach, whatever. Defense has to be your one and only job because Darrell Bevel is never going to interfere with what you do. Darrell Bevel is an offensive coordinator, head coach. You bring in that kind of guy to put the defense together however you want. It is 100% on you. You want to line up? You want to line up and rush three? That's great. You better rush the best three ever, and we better lead the league in interceptions. I don't care. Darrell Bevel hands over the offense to someone temporarily till he can get his feet under him as the head coach. You get someone in here to call the plays, run the scheme as he wants. But Darrell Bevel keeps this job because last year he had this offense looking pretty damn good. And guess what? He had it looking pretty damn good with Jeff Driscoll and David Blau. That says a lot of, yeah, whatever. That says a lot about what you can do. Stafford healthy, Galladay healthy, Hockenson, assuming we can keep Marvin. You have Amendola, you have Swift, you have whatever running back we draft in this year's draft because Adrian Peterson has to retire and they don't seem to want Kerryon anymore. I think the start over does us no good because then we're still having this conversation 3 years from now of, well, he hasn't really done anything. Do we fire him or we need to give him more time? Bring Bevel in. You at least have the compass pointing away. Let's start heading that way. Let's go that way till we fall off a cliff. Let's give him a fair chance.
Stafford was shut out for the first time in his life. We did fall off a cliff.
But that's going to happen at some point. At some point,
it literally had never happened to him.
Well, at some point in his life, Michael Jordan had been blocked. Before that, it had never happened to him. So it's going to happen.
Where is the damn thing? Because I found out, like, the last time it's been years since the Panthers have even shut out anybody, let alone.
Look, this is a bad team no matter what. It doesn't make a difference. But whether you hire someone else, like whether you hire Kellen Moore or you hire, any other person on that list, or you bring in a guy who is literally like everybody, every year you hear Bill Cowher. Whether you bring in a guy like that, guess what? If Bill Cowher is the head coach of this team next year, amazing. They're still going to fucking suck. It's not going to change just because Bill Cowher is the head coach here. It's that thing of it's going to take time. I am sick of every 3 years seeing four new people on that sideline running this thing. I would rather let's keep what we have. Start building from the positive, get rid of the negative, and let's work on it.
What positive, though?
This offense isn't that terrible when you factor in the fact that they have
garbage this year.
When you factor in the fact that they literally have to score on every possession to stay in a football game because we can't stop. This is the 2008 Lions. They have to score every time just to stay in it.
Isn't the point every time you have the ball to try to score? I don't understand this.
No. I mean, yes, the ideal is to score.
What, 27-20, you lost to the Bears, right? Didn't have to score every possession there. 20-0, you lost to the Panthers 2 weeks ago. Didn't have to score every possession there. Half of them would have been stellar. Like, last week against Texans, absolutely. The defense absolutely blew that. Stafford could have had the game of his life, and they'd have lost that one. But let's not pretend that it's 40 points every single game.
With this defense, it very easily could have to be 40 points every game.
But it hasn't been. I'll pull up the actual schedule, and we can see how many times they would have had to score more than 30 points, because it's, shockingly, not as many as I would think. What? 1, 2, 3, about 5 wins, we're saying, if they just put up 30 points.
30 points
is
still
that crazy.
It's not that crazy. That's still 4 touchdowns. You still got to score once a quarter.
Yes, and for me to say, hey, Darrell Bevell, you get the job, 4 touchdowns shouldn't be out of the question.
It's a personal opinion of mine. I'm still holding Darrell Bevell for the length. I'm not holding him for 2020. I'm holding him for what he did year prior with the offense from hell on what he had on the field. So it shows me when we can get the talent on the field, they can do things. When Kenny's on the field with Matthew Stafford, they figure out how to do things. When Stafford doesn't have to look around every 3 seconds to make sure he's not about to get snapped in half like a twig, he can actually do things. He's got happy feet now because he knows he's going to get crushed every time he touches the ball.
So shouldn't the offensive coordinator scheme up something so that he gets rid of the ball quick? That he is not constantly getting pressured?
To Quintez Cephas or Marvin Hall, who are just not open. Yep. It takes them 10 minutes just to get open. You can't throw to Hawk every time. You can't throw. AP is going to burst into dust eventually when you hit him. So
hopefully. That'd be great.
And it doesn't.
I'd like to thank you both for giving us our promo for this week. I appreciate that, but you can continue.
Yeah, no problem. I see what you're saying, Ross. But I guess I may have used the wrong term, and it will kind of let us into a tangent. This offense does not stay on the field long enough to give it a chance. Yes, the opportune thing is to score. Let me finish, man.
Didn't say anything.
The opportune, when I could see you, it just, it's bad.
Okay.
There you go. There he's gone. Ideally you want to score every time the offense gets on the field. But also in some situations, like late in games, you want that offense to stay on the field long enough that you don't leave them with a minute and a half and an 80-yard field and 2 timeouts. You want them to have no timeouts. You want it to be 45 seconds. This offense has had problems doing that, but it's also because that defense can't stop anyone for them to ever have a chance to run it out. They usually have to score late and have to do things in the fourth quarter that is forcing it. I put it a lot on the defense. I think if this defense was marginally decent and could actually be expected to get 3 and outs on 50-60% of their downs, of their possessions, we'd be great. But they can't do that.
No, the defense is, let's be clear, the defense is the number one and probably number two and probably number three problem with this team. However, their complete ineptitude doesn't drag off the mediocrity would be an upgrade to this offense right now when Galladay is out. And it doesn't drag that into an excusable state. This is still bad. This is still everything you're talking about with the offense struggling. Bevell gets some of that blame, not being able to run it out, not being able to protect Stafford, not developing options beyond Galladay and Hockenson. Bevell gets some of that discredit.
For the last few things you mentioned, yes, the first one or two, I say Bevell gets none of that because that's on the defensive messiah, Matt Patricia, who was supposed to come in and patriot the shit out of this team, and we couldn't do it. Stafford, it's tragic, but Stafford has one of the highest percentages of fourth quarter comebacks because he's never had a defense that allows him to rest in the fourth quarter. That guy has to score in the fourth quarter religiously for this team to even remotely keep it close. And that's been his career.
Yes, and that should, if anything, be pushing those opportunities. We've seen pad your stats for your offense. So it would make the, if we're looking at stats, would look more impressive. But 20-0 Panthers, Stafford threw for less than 200 yards. Right? He's thrown for over 300 yards, what, twice this season. If you're down and you have to make a comeback late in the game, you're throwing more. Why isn't he getting more yards then?
Now, that Panthers game, we can keep going back to that one. That Panthers game was just shell shock. They came awful. Out, they came out underperformed, and they did. I harken back to a movie we talk about all the time. They got into quicksand. They started playing bad, and they just kept sinking works like Shane Falco, quicksand. That's what it was. It doesn't excuse anything. Across the board, this team's been terrible. But if I'm interviewing a guy, or if I'm talking about keeping a guy, I can't look at 1 year. I have to look at what he did prior. If Matt Patricia and Daryl Bevel were both up for the head coaching job, you can look at Matt Patricia's last couple years in Detroit. You're not just going to look at what he did 1 year. You're going to look at the overall. Bevel has been a great offensive coordinator and coach in this league. He's been up for head coaching jobs. He was great in Seattle. He was great in Minnesota. He did a great job. Not great. Great's a bad word. He did a good job last year under the circumstances of what he had. Early on in the year, Stafford was an MVP candidate, was playing great. A lot of injuries came across, not really a chance to recover. This year, you can throw in the shortened offseason, 2020 just being what it is, having a coach who, in my opinion, every single year, that defense didn't get better, it got worse. Every single year got worse. And I agree, that's on Bevel the scheme, but I think you'll agree, when you know what you're going up against, there's only so much scheming an offensive coordinator can do in the NFL. This isn't college where you can just pull out the, you know, the flea flicker and all these other crazy trick plays to throw these guys off. They are the best at what they do for a reason. There's only so much scheming you can do before you need to be running the Texas Tech air raid just to keep this alive.
Yes, but things like not running Adrian Peterson 15 times a game seems pretty simple. That would have been nice.
That's across the board a question, but that's carry on too. Why the hell is carry on just completely not...
Well, that's a Bob Quinn problem.
All right, by the way, in case anybody was wondering, Justin Marcus is actually still here. He really is.
Oh, I'm entertained. I have a solution for this team, but I'm letting you guys...
It's a difference of opinion, but okay, but...
Yeah.
So, for me, it's Bevel. I see other guys. I agree. I don't know how to pronounce his name, and I know someone else is going to mention him, but that San Francisco defensive coordinator is obviously the front runner. I'm not going to take that away from him. Yeah. The other name I'm going to mention, and this was brought to me by my friend Mike, who is the boy toy / man candy to our friend Jillian Brown right now. Great, you know, great guy. Texted me as soon as they fired Patricia. I'm going to throw out the name Matt Campbell for Iowa State. I think if you're going to make the jump, it's a jump. It's a college head coach, no NFL, you know, experience of this level. But if you're going to go broad, might as well go as broad as you can. The guys, Iowa State's not a bad football team.
See, I'm out on that. I don't. Okay. When I saw the list and I saw him on there, whenever I see anything relative to college, it makes me go ugh. Like I get like ugh. I just stubbed my toe. That hurt. Like I don't want to try to experiment with a coach transitioning from college to the pros in the midst of the hell that is the Detroit Lions. I need stability. Like I'm going back to my choice. We'll get to in a minute, but I need stability, and having a college coach come in, maybe he can translate that. I'm not going to knock the guy. It's working at the college level, but that's a hard leap coaching wise for me. You're going from college kids who live in dorms or used to outside of this year. And, you know, you go to paid, grown-ass players who have a lot more money and a lot more of a platform, and they're not just, you know it's a different caliber of football player you have to maintain. Okay. Put it that way.
I actually did a deep dive on the last 20 years of Super Bowls and those head coaches, so I can offer up a little stat on this. Of those last 20 years, 14 different head coaches won a Super Bowl. Thanks, Bill, for taking them all. Only two had been a college football head coach at any point in time. Even though 11 of them had been college football coaches of some level, like of some assistant. So it's not a common path that works out very often. It was Tom Coughlin and Pete Carroll.
Yeah,
Eric got the one.
Okay.
So yeah, it doesn't happen a lot. And it's sexy and it's kind of that contrarian pick to take him, but I want to see him in Ann Arbor instead.
That was actually the question that Mike posed to me was, if you're Matt Campbell, what looks more appealing, the Lions job or the U of M job? Because one's available right now. The other one, you got to assume, is going to be available very quickly. So, I'm not against that either, but I'm just saying, for me, and if you've been listening, you'll notice I'm either don't make a lot of changes. Let's give Bevel a chance and let's build off of that. Or let's go the complete other spectrum, throw it to a guy who is like you guys said, is a sexy pick, but we don't know what we're going to get out of it. We could be in for another 3 or 4 years of the same.
Right.
Jay, I'm going to let you go. My last one is actually against you. This is as far as you can go. If you're going to, this guy is going to be on everybody's head coaching lists here in the next year or two. He's obviously having a bad year because of what's going on in Dallas. I like Kellen Moore. I don't think Kellen Moore is ready to be a Lions head coach. Former player. The guy is going to be an offensive genius. He's more likely to be a college head coach, in my opinion, than an NFL head coach. But listen, you want to get that offense going? Get a guy who knows Matt Stafford, practice with Matt Stafford, and could probably tailor an offense perfectly for Matt Stafford. That's my third one, Jay, but I'll let you go now. Your head coaching decisions.
Why don't we just go get Clayton Kershaw while we're at it? Like,
I'm sure he'd make a great long snapper.
No, I see the connection there. All right, so mine might get the same response I just gave Eric, but this head coach, he has been a head coach before in the NFL. When he was hired in, he quickly found out that the team he was coaching for didn't provide the simple necessity of water or Gatorade during their practices. Quickly went to his GM, who was a pain in the ass GM, became best friends with him, and gave the players what they needed. Very, very small example that I'm talking about, but this person is Marvin Lewis. And what he did for Cincinnati is, in the first 4 years, was able to get them to the playoffs. They competed. He tailed off. He stood around for a while at Cincinnati. I don't think they had the talent to ever actually succeed. I mean, Red Rocket's not doing it. And you have Vontaze Burfict, who had
but you gotta
a
remember,
very big problem.
He had Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
He had Chad Ochocinco, which if you can deal with Chad Ochocinco, you can deal with anyone in Detroit. But no, I mean, yeah. Okay.
And that's the energy I want. I'm sick of getting these straight-laced guys. I want drama. I want divas. I want Marvin Lewis.
Actually, they were. Sorry, go ahead, Jay. But I was going to say, they were a Super Bowl contender about a decade ago, and Joey Porter for the Steelers knocked Palmer out in the first quarter of a game, and John Kitna had to play, and then sure enough, 3 months later, we signed John Kitna.
I didn't know. So, but needless to say, I want Marvin Lewis. I want stability. I want someone who can walk in and realize that something's not working and change it, even if it's like close to when he starts and he's like, yeah, football guys need water. Like, players, athletes, they need water while they practice. I need that rudimentary of a coach to bring this back into where we should be. So my pick's Marvin Lewis.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. What interferes with your happiness? Is something preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect in a safe and private online environment and start communicating in under 24 hours. It's not self-help, it's professional counseling. Anything you share is confidential, it's all very affordable, and you can reassure yourself by checking out the testimonials posted on their site. I want you to start living a happier life today, so much so that because you're a listener, I'm going to get you 10% off your first month if you visit them right now at betterhelp.com/overtime. That's betterhelp.com/overtime. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/overtime.
See, for me, I don't hate it. I really don't. That's about as safe as you can get when making these moves. But to me, that feels like someone we just talked about 20 minutes ago. That feels like Jim Caldwell. It's never going to get you over the hump, but is going to get you to a point where you're a winning football team. Just you have to decide what level of winning is acceptable. I don't see him as a guy that's going to ever lift a Lombardi trophy for the Lions as a head coach, but I also see him as a guy that could get us back to 10-6, 11-5 consistently. You're going to make the playoffs. You might even get a division or two here or there. You're likely going to get bounced in the first or second round of the playoffs. It's not bad, but I think it just sets us up for another 6 years of let's get to the top. Let's get everything built the way we want. And then kind of like Rick Carlisle, Larry Brown, let's hand it off to the guy that's going to take it the rest of the way. It's like setting up the, you know, the first three legs of the relay. He's not the finisher. He's not the anchor, but he's a good call.
That, that would be equivalent for what I was going to do here to playing Minesweeper and like, oops, on my first click, I hit the bomb. I was going to save this for later as my spicy wild card. But if the Lions really want to do something different, take an up-and-coming guy, they've got one under their noses in Braden Coombs. And if they went with him as a head coach, who gave him his shot, who trained him up? Arvin Lewis,
yeah.
who's the co-DC at ASU right now. Would he take a spot as a defensive coordinator under his former pupil? Look, this is if you want to completely fucking blow shit up. That's the route you go, and that's why it was a wild card. It's not my preferred one, but I could see it.
I don't see that as a dynamite stick, though, because John Harbaugh was a special teams coach before he took the head coaching job at Baltimore.
Well, that's part of the reason why I would even sniff around Coombs, is that there's a path here, right? And if he's good, you give him a chance. I'm more of say blow it up because, hey, he's a young guy, and there's going to be a learning curve. And so you're not winning next year with him.
No.
Probably not the year after that. So and that's why I say it's more of a blow things up thing.
And I think the hiring of Sean McVay sets up that path for younger guys to get chances, which is why even though he's not ready for it, Kellen Moore will get looks earlier than he probably should because younger guys, they kind of have a new aspect to the game. It's that regime changeover from, you know, here are the guys that are going to be in the NFL. Maybe not with the same team, but in the NFL for the next 30 years, while the other guys who have done it for the last 30 are going to start aging out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's a bold move.
Yeah.
And it's a move the Lions don't normally make.
Absolutely.
So that's why I had it in my wild card. I'll take the easy one. It's my favorite. It was Robert Saleh from San Francisco. Comes with Richard Sherman's bountiful endorsement. My goodness.
For whatever that means to you.
Yeah, book it right now. If Saleh comes back to Detroit, right, grew up in Dearborn, Richard Sherman's coming with him. Starting quarterback for your Detroit Lions next year could be Richard Sherman, and I would bet on it. His contract's up after this year. What's interesting is he was in Seattle with Bevel. So if you want Bevel to stick around as an OC, there is the connection there. So that could stick around. Maybe there's some stability if you're really trying to push win now. I would love if he brought in Dan Quinn, his former defensive coordinator with Seattle, to be the defensive coordinator here too, just recently fired. That could be a fun staff. So that's kind of what I'm pinning my hopes on. Two other names I want to just throw out though is Dennis Allen, New Orleans D coordinator, and Todd Bowles, Tampa Bay's current D coordinator. They're both former head coaches.
Former Jets right? head coach, yeah, okay.
Former Jets and former Raiders head coach. They struggle. I'm not going to lie to you. But in part of my deep dive on those last 20 Super Bowls, I found out that half of them were former head coaches. This was their second head coaching job, and all but two of the coaches either were a former head coach themselves or one of their coordinators were a former head coach. So there is a learning curve associated with this that you have to have someone in the room that knows it and has been through it before. Caldwell didn't have that. The closest he had was Gunther Cunningham, who was a head coach for a minute and was a staffer at the time. Patricia, he had Jim Bob Cooter and Paul Pasqualoni, whose head coaching was mid-major schools in college, right?
Yeah.
No one to really draw it. And we saw his first year fell apart because he didn't know how to be a head coach.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think. Bevel was in Seattle for the Super Bowl? Or was he on Minnesota at the time?
He might have been on Minnesota at the time. I know he has 1 year of overlap with Saleh. So they're probably in each other's Rolodex.
Yeah. No, I just meant more for like that you were saying how you got to have someone who has Super Bowl experience or has that kind of
head coach experience.
Yeah.
What's actually interesting about that is only one of the first time head coaches had a Super Bowl on the record previously, and it was Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
Every other one that was successful that won a Super Bowl, that was their first Super Bowl ever.
Look, at the end of the day,
speaking of Mike Tomlin, why can't we do what Pittsburgh does and they never get new head coaches? Like, why can't we just like what do they do differently that they grab the right guy for better or for worse or talent wise and they just roll with them?
That front office hasn't changed in 50 years. That's why. And you know what? I will say Pittsburgh is a great football team, but they're also great for the fact that they ride it out. 1 year of bad doesn't turn them into like, they don't go into a frenzy. Whereas in Detroit, if you don't win that first year, you're immediately put on a clock and you're not even guaranteed to get through the second year. It's just that thing of they very much are a win. Detroit is very much a win now kind of situation and they don't need to be. You got to think about it. In our span of this, honestly, Jim Schwartz, I don't remember how long Rod Marinelli was there, but Jim Schwartz might be the longest, or Caldwell might be the longest tenured head coach we've ever seen. Because it's such a quick turnover. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
You can go back to like Wayne Fonts and all them, and they may have been there a little longer, but we don't really remember that. I always put 2000 on for when we really kind of can say we remember, and that was Mooch. That was Steve Mariucci, who was fired after Thanksgiving. Like, they literally didn't even want to finish the year with him. I didn't know you could fire a coach halfway through a season until then.
You're absolutely right. Schwartz is the longest tenured head coach since Wayne Fonts.
Yep. So that's what I'm saying. Like, Detroit doesn't ride things out. We don't get, you literally get 3 years if you don't have and even then, a winning record's not guaranteed if you look at Caldwell. We don't give people chances. You can't build you can't build something unless you let someone be there long enough. It's the same with college. That's why these guys look so great their first year after a regime change, because everyone they recruited is finally playing. And so it's someone else's roster. It's just you using it. So,
I think you have a very good point there. However, I just want to throw a little context on it. That 20-year Super Bowl, to jump back to that, sorry, again, the average is less than 4 years from their hiring date to their first Super Bowl win for the guys that have won it and have never been a head coach. It's 1.8 years for guys who have been a head coach prior.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 years isn't crazy if you're not actually being competitive.
It isn't, but I would, without seeing the actual teams, and again, the Patriots eat up a lot of that. But,
they do.
Well, I get that. But I'm just saying, like, outside of, I'm not trying to hurt the stat. I'm just trying to say, like, unless I go through every team, a lot of those teams don't have the prolonged amount of struggle that we do. So you're building from even lower. It's not like you're, it's true, but it's not like you're building from a mid-level team that has consistently been 7-9 and they just needed that next step. We're a consistent 3-13, 4-12 to kind of team. So you're building from further up. It doesn't take, it's the same as asking someone, hey, by the way, I'm going to hire you to be at Eastern Michigan's head coach. You have 3 years to win a national championship. You're not going to do it. It'd be impossible. You need a little bit more time to, if you're going to ever have a chance at that, you need a little bit more time to build it out.
So taking a historically bad football program in the state of Michigan and making it national quality. So you're saying PJ Fleck is coming to the Lions?
Yes. I'd love that. I would not be upset. I would row that fucking boat all day if you asked me to.
Hey, he can row my boat. I'm a big
You
fucker.
Look like PJ Fleck. Be quiet.
A little bit.
You do. He looks like PJ. You should go as PJ Fleck for Halloween next year. All right. Those are our thoughts for it. Obviously, this is just getting started. We're going to touch on it quite a bit. Because we have limited amount of time and we really want to get to this, I'm going to make this real short and sweet. Ohio State 57, Michigan State 12. It's out of the way. It's over. It's fast.
That's ridiculous. Four field goals? That's crazy.
Sorry, 57, nothing. No, Michigan State, obviously, you're going up against the juggernaut. If you guys can even post three touchdowns, I will never say a mean thing about your head coach ever again. It's gonna be rough, Jay. It's gonna be rough. But the game also get canceled. The head coach isn't even allowed to travel with them. So this football game is still at a chance of getting canceled. Michigan, obviously, by the grace of God, got canceled. So we'll see what happens there. Want to touch on it, though. It's been a couple weeks. Jay, we asked him to do some research, and he did a little bit. Still probably needs a little more help. But I want to talk NBA free agency, because our Detroit Pistons, the use of the statement "just won't look the same" is honestly true, because no one is still on this team other than Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose. A lot of changes. A lot of big moves. Pistons with the 7th overall pick draft Killian Hayes. I don't remember out of where, but
France.
Thank you. That's a great school. Actually, I hear they're on the up and coming.
Real good pastry.
Absolutely. And then 8 picks later, trade with the Portland Trailblazers to take Isaiah Stewart. Mm-hmm. Just a couple picks later, Nets draft. Oh God, Sadiq Bey.
Sadiq Bey
traded to the Pistons after being already dealt to the Clippers. Then we took a break, guys. We decided to let some other teams have a player for a few minutes. 38th overall pick took on Sabin Lee, who was drafted by the Utah Jazz. So 4 new guys in the draft, 4 guys that we'll have to see what they can do. Want to get into the free agency and all that, but Russ, I would really, really not be doing my job if I didn't ask, when is the last time we saw an overhaul like this in such a quick amount of time?
Never. Yeah. Dan Gundy tried, right? But his moves were like Ben Gordon and then Charlie Villanueva. Like, no, not like this. This was like I booted up 2K and was like, let's cause some shit. This was absolutely wild. And this is the most fun that I've had as a Pistons fan since Ben Wallace was actually good. That's it. This was a lot of fun to watch. Confusing as all get out, but a blast.
So this isn't normal, because I'm a okay.
NBA free agency, probably you see 1/3 would be stretching it of this. It's very rare that out of a 15-man roster you see 13 new guys. It's just, it wild. Doesn't happen.
Yeah, it no, it's, but I was this, still this twitching is, at this, like 1 a.m., like afraid another move was made.
This is a GM who is literally just sitting down and going, okay, like Russ said, okay, let's fuck shit up. But it's also him kind of saying, hey, this team you guys built, I don't like it. Let's fix it. So
that's good energy. But that's really good energy.
You know what else it is? It feels to me like a Steve Yzerman kind of thing going, we're not going to be good next year. Get over it. But what we are going to do is find out who's going to be on this team for a while. You know what I mean? Like, he's bringing young players. He's using, you know, I'm going to blank it. What's it called? The stretch that we did with
stretch and wave.
Stretch and wave. He's using everything. He's using everything to his advantage to make moves to try to improve this team.
You cannot say that he's not trying, because oh my God, he remade this roster in his image in a week. This is literally biblical level of change, right? At least God rested on the seventh day. I'm pretty sure Weaver wasn't. He was still making phone calls.
He was going. He was definitely going.
Can I one move of note? So you guys endure me and Glenn Denning with the Red Wings. Well, I think I found my Glenn Denning at the Pistons for next year, because what we have seen with the Pistons, last year's Pistons, I wouldn't go to a single game. If I could go to a game for this next one, I probably would go to at least 2 games to check them out. Mainly because Mason Plumlee is about to become my Glenn Denning of the Pistons.
Oh, my God.
A durable center that can pass the ball. He's my Glenn Denning.
See, I would have, honestly, I'm not going to lie, I thought he was walking it up to Joshua Jackson. Or Josh Jackson.
I thought he was walking up to Isaiah Stewart, because I was going to say Isaiah Stewart is exactly Jay's kind of player. But, oh my God, Mason Plumlee, that's exactly right, because it's going to be so annoying listening to you root for him.
Well, and see, of those, I mean, Mason Plumlee is going to be great. Former Blue Devil, so you know I like him. But for me, it's another former Blue Devil. It's Jahlil Okafor. I like that. I like a real big man. I like a real big man who is not going to leave the paint. He's going to play down there. I like him for that. I like, look, Derrick Rose has shown potential for being, you know, having a second wind in his career. That pick and roll is going to be fun to watch. Hopefully Blake can stay healthy and actually get on the court and we can pay him money that he actually earned as opposed to just sitting there on Twitter, asking who your favorite movie star is. Cause that's all he does anymore is just tweet out stupid questions. But a lot of changes. Russ, you said you had him, so I'll let you kind of walk us through him.
Okay. Well, it all started with getting rid of Bruce Brown, who actually would have been the not annoying equivalent of Glenn Denny, by the way. But we'll rapid fire get through. Bruce Brown goes to Brooklyn for Musa and a second round pick. Christian Wood in a heavily protected first goes to Houston for Trevor Ariza. You can forget that name. He's gone soon. In the 16th pick, which ends up being Isaiah Stewart. Traded out Luke Kennard and four, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, second-round picks, and Justin Patton to the Clippers for the 19th pick, which becomes Sadiq Bey. Rodney Magruder, which also can forget his name, and Jalen Hands could be interesting. Next one was they traded cash, just straight cash, homie, and future draft consideration to Utah for Tony Bradley and the pick that ends up being Saben Lee. Yep. Then the draft actually happens. This was all prior. So we get our four players there. Eric already covered that. And then after he cracked his knuckles, he gets to work again. Trades Tony Snell and Kerry Thomas to Atlanta for Dwayne Dedman to be able to dump his money. Trades Tony Bradley to Philadelphia for Zaire Smith to dump his money. Waves both of them is the next transaction. Trade Trevor Ariza to OKC to send them back to where Weaver came from to take on guard Dellen Wright. Then we get actually the signings because now he's made this space to actually get it done. Jahlil Okafor, Josh Jackson, Mason Plumlee, Jeremy Grant, 3 years, $60 million. Wayne Ellington is back. And then Servetus, draft pick from last year, signed. And then, of course, the marquee one. Everyone wanted a Ball brother, right? LiAngelo Ball joins on a non-guaranteed contract. But he's on the roster for now.
All right, well, I'm going to circle back because there's one in there that I texted you both when it happened. I tweeted about it in the comment. I was not, and it ended up working out. It ended up doing something for us. I was not a fan of the Kennard trade. I liked Luke Kennard. I liked what he, listen, at the end of the day, he was a good spot up shooter who was, I will say, above serviceable at defense. But he could score. We could trust him to get the ball. We could trust him to make shots late in the game. We didn't really have that over the last couple of years, unless you want to consider, some really, really, really bad players as scorers. I'm looking at you, Reggie. I'm looking right at you. You were a poor man's Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook's already a poor man, so that says a lot about you. So I liked Kennard. I was kind of hoping he would be one of the like the former players to stick around. Obviously, though, moves had to be made. Jay, I'm really astonished that Josh Jackson wasn't your. You got a Spartan here now, man. Aren't you happy?
Of course, but Plumlee was just something that gravity. He's a durable guy. Glenn Denning's. Well, don't worry about it. I do like Josh Jackson, but I like Plumlee right now.
Okay. Well, we want to. Obviously, we're going to talk about our Pistons here, but I want to throw a few at you that are kind of big signings, and I want to. We're going to talk about did anybody kind of trade, draft, sign their way into kind of playoff contention? First three overall picks were Anthony Edwards, the guard out of Georgia, to the Timberwolves. That's a big one. Obviously, with Russell there, with Contavious. I almost said Contavious Caldwell Pope.
The Lakers.
Who the hell is their center? He always goes by that.
Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, he always goes by the three KAC, and I always blank it. That's why I said Contavious Caldwell Pope. Carl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell in Minnesota. That's great. Second overall pick. Warriors draft James Wiseman, big man. The thing is, I kind of wonder, would they have maybe liked to have gotten Klay Thompson examined before they made this draft pick? Klay Thompson, obviously out for the year with the Achilles. The only upside, Andrew Wiggins is on that team now with Steph Curry, so they have a second scorer. Wiseman fills a need. They really did not have a true center on that team. When you're using Draymond Green as your big man, you got a lot of problems. Third overall Hornets, LaMelo Ball. The only thing that great that comes out of this, we can finally see the one-on-one matchup between LaVar Ball and Michael Jordan.
One quick comment on that.
I'm a freak when it comes to watching Yahoo update their app on the phone, but at the last sentence they always put something. They did put adding MJ and LeVar to the free agency pool to finally get the matchup we all want to draft and see. So they, in their little tiny update to their app, they even want
well,
to
Well, they asked him about it in his press conference. And he said, I can't really answer that. One's my dad, one's my boss. But I think we all know how that would turn out. So even he knows what's going to happen. But look, it's great. The only one, and I got to say, I have to blame Justin for this because he bugged me into it. The only thing I'm upset about with the eighth overall pick, the Knicks draft Obi Toppin. Justin, completely pushed me into wanting Obi Toppin. I wanted him so bad by the time it was over. So, Jay, that's your fault.
You know, they were picking either athleticism with not a decent shot or a great passer in Hayes that doesn't have the, I'm already looking like I belong in the league already. So they went with the finesse over the athleticism, in my opinion. I might have to watch the Knicks now. Because I romanticize Obi Toppin.
You already suffer through Michigan State football and the Lions. You don't want to add the Knicks to your repertoire. That'll hurt.
Don't do it for your blood pressure alone.
That'll hurt. We'll get a lot of Sergeant Salty takes out of it, but that'll hurt. Couple big signings. Carmelo Anthony re-signs with the Portland Trailblazers. I really like this one. Gives them that, you know, three-headed monster of scoring. Hopefully they can get some big bodies in there to help them down low, play a little defense, but Damian Lillard and Carmelo Anthony, just great, and CJ McCollum, just a great combination. Lakers, I feel like we're going to be saying this a lot. LeBron James signs an extension, AD signs a 5-year contract, and not to mention the Lakers and center Mark Gasol finalizing a 2-year deal. Gasol just adds another big body to it, really helps them out. The one I thought was interesting was that the, obviously Utah Jazz extend Donovan Mitchell. That's great for Utah. He's one of the top players in the league. The one that I kind of was jumping on was Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward turned down money from Boston to head to, I see Russ smirking on that. Why you turned down money from Boston with Jason Tatum there, Kemba Walker. You literally are leaving Kemba Walker for his former team, a team that is just nowhere near being ready to compete. Turns down 34.2 to take a 4-year, $120 million contract. So it takes less money to go somewhere else. That says a lot about what you really thought about Boston. As you look at this, guys, do you see a team that kind of drafted or signed their way into being a contender? Obviously, the last one is Russell Westbrook traded to the Washington Wizards for former first overall pick John Wall. That, to me, just feels like a straight swap. You didn't really gain anything one way or the other on that one.
For me, it's more so this team's already a contender, but this might be the last year they contend if they don't get their shit straight, and that was the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Getting Drew Holiday, it replaces Eric Bledsoe, and you actually have talent in that position now, because if you don't win, Giannis is bye-bye. So I was watching them. I also was watching Portland a little bit, Mello with the depth on the bench. And then they got a young guy named Harry Giles coming out of Sacramento. He's only had 2 years with that club. He never really had a chance with them. So it's kind of like what we're doing with, I believe, Denver. We got another dude, who never really got a chance that we get to see if we can jumpstart his, it was a Denver. Russ is giving me that look. What's the Nuggets?
The Pistons signed?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeremy Grant. Yep, yeah. Denver.
Okay. I'm batting 1,000. So it's Portland and it's the Bucks. And then, of course, any game that Miami is going to wear their new Miami retro jerseys, I think that's a big move, too. So those are my three teams.
Oh, man. I wasn't ready for the I can't wait for the Miami Vice jersey take.
Oh, God.
It's creative. I'll give them that. And what wasn't creative was what the Bucks tried to do this offseason. Yes, they brought in Drew Holiday, and they needed to do something, but they completely butchered bringing in Bogdanovich, who ends up going to the team that I was most interested in their offseason, Atlanta. They brought in Rondo, they brought in Gallinari, they brought in Chris Dunn from Chicago, and, of course, Bogdanovich is who they ended up with. That team's going to be super interesting. They're going to push for a low seed in the playoffs. They're not going to have any defense, but they're going to have a ton of offense. So it's going to be fun to watch them at least. But that's an interesting team. I absolutely love the John Wall and Russell Westbrook trade, not for either team, but for the Pistons, because it makes sure that both teams are going to be better than the Pistons by switching those, because Washington was, they were about to implode, and Bradley Beal can only do so much when he's in a toxic environment, and John Wall needed to leave. John Wall going to Houston ensures that Houston's going to try to compete at least. They're going to keep putting something on there that is going to end up being better than Pistons. So this trade means the Pistons get a better draft pick. I'm excited about that. But if we're talking about teams that I think push themselves into contention, Atlanta is the main one that I think that actually push themselves into a serious playoff team. Not a championship contender, but they're going to be interesting. They'll be fun.
Yeah. Milwaukee did make a bad move with all that, but even more, they didn't re-sign Robin Lopez, which means we don't get any more WWE fights in the locker room before the game. If you haven't seen those, please Google. They're amazing.
Yep,
watching the Greek Freak knock him out with the Killer Cobra. It's just great. Atlanta was a great one. They did a lot of moves. I don't know that they really did that big move that puts them over top. They still have talent. Trey is still one of the best shooters, young shooters coming up. It'll be fun to see. Obviously the Lakers, they're just kind of there. Like you got to get through them. I do think that getting Carmelo back is great for Portland. I think it's going to really, really push him, over the top. Unfortunately, the team that I wanted to see do something and didn't was Boston. I thought if they could have held on to Gordon Hayward, they had a chance to kind of keep going, didn't really do much with it. So yeah, for me, it is kind of the Lakers just kind of established their position, saying, yeah, you got to get through us and you're probably not going to get through us kind of thing. It should be interesting. But the number one for me was Utah. Re-signing, that re-sign does them a big favor. They need to keep collecting talent. And if you don't re-sign your best players, you're just never going to have a chance.
Hot take. Keeping good players is good.
Yeah, apparently.
One question for the Lakers, because you brought them up, because I just, you know, when I'm always focused on Detroit being a footnote, does KCP actually do anything productive for the Lakers? Is that more so he's just a product of being around AD and LeBron and getting a championship?
He brings one thing I don't feel they have a lot of, and that is perimeter shooting. Over time, listen, 2004 LeBron looks nothing like 2020 LeBron. LeBron James has legitimately just become a point guard. He doesn't care to do much. He'll go out, he'll get his 20 points because he can, but LeBron James is now just he's a 6'9" point guard. He just wants to set everybody else up because he knows he can't go out there for 82 games and average 35. He can, but he won't have any gas left. The titles are all that matter to him. He's going to retire as one of the top two players to ever play this game. So, and unfortunately in the NBA, it's turned into stretch ball. All these big men want to shoot three pointers. That's not what you're on the team to do. You're on the team to be down there, get the rebounds, get the easy buckets. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope gives them that because they really didn't have that anywhere else. And I said it during the playoffs when we were talking about this. That was the reason that Portland was such a problem would have been such a problem for LA. Portland could shoot the lights out. And the problem is, if they got on a run, the Lakers did not have enough perimeter game to keep up with them. Now, vice versa, Carmelo Anthony doesn't play defense, so LeBron James could have averaged 38 points a game in that series, but
again,
yeah, but at the same time, Lillard and CJ McCollum brought up way too much of a problem. So guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope are great to have because they can shoot from outside and you're not asking for a lot out of them other than that.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a nice 3-and-D complimentary guy.
Which works. I mean, there's nothing wrong.
You need him.
Yeah. I mean, just
I'm asking because I want to learn. I need to know these.
No, I
just figured out where the wing player sits on the court. So I'm getting there.
Obviously NBA training camp starting here or has started. Talked about the rest of the league. Let's focus in on the Pistons. Realistic expectations. After all this, obviously we kind of need to see them step on the court, maybe do a couple games of this season just to get a feel. But Russ, as you look at it, you look at the roster, there's some guys we don't really have a lot on. There's some guys we've seen over the last couple of years. Kind of expectations for these Detroit Pistons, early look.
Oh, I'll say I like the idea of basically using Plumlee and Grant as scaffolding to build these draft picks up and let those seeds grow into fruitful plants. However, it's not going to help this year. I still think this is a bottom five team in the league. Williams Hill Sportsbook has them as the second worst team in the league. I think it might be a little bit better than that, but you have to get ahead of them, the Knicks, Cavs, OKC, Minnesota, and Chicago, if you want to escape the top five. Four of them, maybe they get by. But it's too much young talent and too much change in a shortened offseason and restricted offseason too, to be able to have it all come together too fast. And if it does work, it's because Blake Griffin's playing really well and his ass is going to get traded then. So there's a ceiling on how well this team can perform, and I don't think that they will reach a point organically this year that it's going to be anything more than that.
You're talking about a shortened offseason. The Pistons haven't played since February.
I'm
just messing with
you. But they changed the entire roster 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm just, well, those couple guys that are on there should be very ready to go. They should understand this offense extensively. Blake Griffin's been on his ass since February. He should be ready to go.
Three guys going, what's a Dwayne Casey? Yeah,
100% understand what you're talking about. Jay, over to you, man.
I'm coining it as fun bad. I think Russ even already said fun bad today, but they're going to be fun and they're going to be bad. I love the angle from the gambling perspective because they're not going to be a good team, and I'm going to enjoy it still. They're going to be fun and bad. I'm going to have some bad fun as well. I'm going to be gambling on them because that becomes a regulated activity in this state by the end of the month. Why not put the money on the Stones and watch them lose and still have fun watching them lose? So fun bad.
Fun bad. Nothing wrong with that.
It's all fun bad.
Yeah, fun bad's a great one for the reason of this is going to be the perfect year. And Jay, you already kind of did it. I'm hoping I hope you take the blinders off for a couple games. Just to you know, have a chance to see everyone. But you're going to get to find out who your Piston is. You're going to get to watch these guys and really kind of learn who's your guy. Who's the one you like watching? Obviously, Jay, with Plumlee, I like Jahlil Okafor. I'm excited to see other guys. Everybody gets a fair tryout. But it's going to be one of those years where you're going to find your guy. You're going to find those few people you're really going to root for that you want to see. And it really is that. It's almost like an expansion draft. We literally have a whole new team. And yeah, they're not going to be great this year. If they are, it's going to be one of those Las Vegas Knights fluke that apparently all the pieces just fit together for one, you know, for a couple months. But other than that, it's going to be bad. I agree with Russ, bottom five. Unless the East takes a total nosedive, this isn't a playoff team. But unfortunately, because the lottery is stupid, this is also not a top five drafting team because the lottery doesn't want to give us a top five draft pick. We can have the seventh, we can't have the fifth, but it's gonna be interesting to watch. Dwayne Casey and Weaver together, I think they're gonna, it seems like a pretty good marriage of Casey's gonna take whatever Weaver puts on the, you know, puts on the plate, and he's just gonna run with it and see what he can do. I'm excited to see what it's gonna be. Lastly, again, I have to throw a curveball to these guys, and I have to do this. I'm asking you, crystal ball this. Give me the final four, the two West, the two East. Who are we seeing at the end of this shortened season?
I can barely name three teams, my friend.
No, that's your fault. I'm gonna be straightforward. I'll give it to you. It's the I'd be remiss. It's the LA Lakers. Okay, it's the LA Lakers, and it's obviously the Milwaukee Bucks because I think Giannis is going to go full tilt here to try to get one before he has to make a decision if he's staying or going. And then to add to it, I see this. Russ kind of called it. I see it as Atlanta. Maybe being able to make a run with it. Maybe the pieces fit. Now, this is where the weird one is, because any person who's gambling right now would tell you the Clippers or the Nuggets have to be the pick to do it, to be the other one. I'm going to take the Dallas Mavericks. Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis, they if the right pieces are put around them, they could be very tough. So I'm going to go with Dallas, L.A., Atlanta, Milwaukee.
Ooh, that's interesting.
How dare you make me work hard?
I know, yeah. I'm rapidly scrambling through here. Oh. All right, I'll go with mine. Out of the East, I can't not take the Bucks, so I'll take them. And then I think in a Bryce Harper-ian, sorry, phonetics, kind of a twist, Boston will make it after losing Gordon Hayward. And he will sit down in Charlotte going, oh, no, what have I done?
That was
and
the
LaMelo Ball will pat him on the back.
That was the tough one for me of do you go safe with Boston or do you even maybe think Doc Rivers coming to the 76ers can figure something out that everyone else just hasn't been able to do? Because Doc Rivers has had some immense talent over the years, and obviously when the pieces fit, he's got a title in Boston, could never get one in Los Angeles, so he's just coast-hopping right now.
Well, and this is how it's going to happen for the Celtics to get into the Eastern Conference Final. They'll be against the 76ers, and the 76ers will be up 3-1, and Doc Rivers will lose another series 3-1 and extend his lead to the most 3-1 series losses ever.
Yeah,
and that's how his former team will make it further.
Right, so Milwaukee, Boston. Charlotte, are you saying Milwaukee, Boston,
yeah,
and other side?
Lakers and out of the West. Denver lost too much depth, I think. The easy one's the Clippers.
Well, you got to think, it's very unlikely that James Harden is sitting on that Houston roster. Which, by the way, I love
such
that
a wild card.
I love that neither of us mentioned Brooklyn with Kyrie and KD on that team.
Yeah, Brooklyn's the second biggest wild card after Houston, and it could be because they've got something going on together. If the rumored Kyrie for Harden swap happens, I'm bumping the Nets way up.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, I don't know, because then if those rumors get out, Kyrie could go full pout baby like he did in Cleveland, and who knows how that turns out. So screw it. I'll go either. I'll go easy, rather. They won't even have to move stadiums. They've got a perfect bubble to themselves. I'll go Lakers Clippers.
Okay. It's over to you, sir.
Hi, I'm just here, so I won't be fined. No, I'm Bucks, and then I want Miami Heat just because of the jerseys, but like, how many times can I actually say that out loud? So we'll go Bucks and Celtics out of the East, kind of echoing what Russ was just doing. And then for the West, I'm just playing with what I got, my friend. Obviously, the Lakers are out of the West there, too. I kind of like Dallas because they had a shot in the bubble. They were looking cute. I don't know. It's either Golden State or Dallas. I think I'm just going to go Dallas just because I want to see Mark Cuban more on my TV. And they've got some talent over there as well. His name's escaping me. I should know his name.
Who?
But the Mavs.
Luka Doncic?
Yeah, that guy. I like
the guy I mentioned 4 minutes ago.
Hey, I was calling an audible. I had to figure out who played on which conference,
yeah,
my
that's
friend.
Fair.
Which NBA teams 2020?
That's what I googled. That's what I googled.
While Russ was giving his, I literally texted Justin and said, "Look at Golden State," because no one mentioned Brooklyn. No one mentioned Golden State. Two teams that very easily could be playing for an NBA championship this year. Golden State didn't have Steph Curry last year. They add Andrew Wiggins. Wiseman, we have to see what he can be, but he's a big body down there that's great for Steph on that pick and roll. It's not out of the question because the one thing I mentioned the Lakers didn't have was shooting. Well, Golden State has some of that, and they're pretty damn good at it. So we'll see what happens. As always, want to thank these two. Really just jam-packed show. That's what happens when you have 2 weeks of content to try to get through. So my thanks to the stat man, the guy who just doesn't want to agree with me about Daryl Bevel, but I can't blame him for it. Russ Ivanek, as always, making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
The funniest thing about that is I started off with saying I'm not closing the door on Daryl Bevel, and then we argued about keeping the door open for 20 minutes. But it was fun.
Someone needs to take the medicine. No, Russ, I agree with you. It's not going to happen, but it's fun to work through. And as always, Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus, look, we threw this little 5'2" man into the deep end of the pool. when it came to the NBA and asked him to swim. And you did very good without the water wings.
Hey, God bless you. I'm 5'4", so try again.
and those 2 inches matter.
Every inch matters, my friend. And yes, throw me into the deep end of the NBA. I will try my best to make it work. I did research today. I learned who's in what conference today. So I'm getting better every day.
Hey, as long as you're improving, that's all that matters, my friend. And as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.